Here begins the second part of my PennCast conversation with Mr. Ashley Bell, Assistant Secretary for Customs and Border Modernization at the Australian Border Force.
Moving on to trade modernization, I mean, you know, the fact that you have a customs and border modernization team that you had is a very good sign that ABF is focused on modernization. Could you briefly describe some of the key aspects of the trade modernization program that ABF is currently carrying out?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we have a range of initiatives that we, the ABF, are taking forward, but importantly, and this is something that only commenced maybe, you know, three or four years ago, we've also got a broader program of work that we call our Simplified Trade System Agenda. And that's a whole of government effort. So it brings everyone in. Like, again, when I talk about that border as an asset and the border as an ecosystem, we're also talking on the government side about multiple different agencies operating, whether it's in biosecurity or whether it's in, you know, our therapeutic goods administration or whether it's, you know, defense. There's so many different entities that traders would engage with. So the idea being that as we take forward reform, productivity enhancing trade reform, we want to do it in a coherent way across government and with industry. And that allows us to say, well, if we're going to tweak this part over here or this particular piece of legislation or a process, why don't we adopt that across government? It's a good idea. How do we be more efficient as a broader government? And now, you know, cross-government reform is challenging. It makes it harder, but I think the benefit that you get at the end of the day is that much better. You get the better ideas, you get better engagement, it's tested. And so we're really, really happy to both be a partner and a real driver of that work. Within our agenda, in terms of looking at ABF's responsibilities, particularly around customs and trade, the three elements, I mean, there's a range of initiatives and projects, and certainly, you know, welcome any kind of your listeners to sort of reach out and talk to those in more detail. And, you know, we've got a lot of information out there. But just to bring it to our focus areas, there's three components that, you know, my teams look at. The first is what we consider our regulatory reform work, which is really about looking at whether our frameworks are fit for purpose. And that fit for purpose is a critical part. So in our government, we really look at, you know, you can't set and forget when it comes to regulatory controls, because what you did it for when it was put in might not be the case. Business models evolve, characters and actors in the environment change. And so what it's looking at is, are those frameworks still required, and how do we manage that tension? We're talking about facilitation and protection, and how can we reduce the impact on our traders, simplify that cross-border trade experience through our legislation and regulation. The second I touched on before was in terms of the cargo, is the work we're doing on to develop new intervention models. So this is looking at understanding our business processes and looking at the whole thing, whether it's property, you know, procurement, you know, workforce, technology, you know, our cargo, x-ray machines, looking at the whole component and then understanding how we can make it more efficient and effective, and in partnership with industry. And that's something we're definitely doing in that cargo space. And then lastly, I think it's a probably the that keeps me up the most at night, which is looking at modernizing our trade technology and uplifting our data capabilities. So this is probably more in that technology space or that hard IT space as well. These are huge challenges. You know, we're talking about big systems, and when we're talking about systems that affect trade relationships, our trade system and the flow of cargo, there is zero room for getting that wrong, you know. So it is difficult and complex, but we also see that in terms of an understanding what our officers will need in the future. So if we're going to take the time to do those reforms and, you know, invest in the new system, what is going to be the role of the customs officer in the future? What will they need that technology to be able to do? And whether that's about, you know, digitalizing, automating, or kind of utilizing, you know, data more effectively, you know, to jobs quicker. we're really keen to understand what those requirements are and then building that back with our, you know, IT people to make sure the investments we're making are connected. And I think then it's about those three elements coming together in a way. So, you know, three elements across reform, processes, technology, and then we stack that across whole of government. It's a really easy piece of work, Tom. So,
piece of cake. Yeah,
yeah, piece of cake.
By the end of the year, I would think. Yeah,
hopefully. Yeah, but look, it's and we've got lots of initiatives that fit under those different parts. But I always, you know, when we're talking to the team, it's, you know, you can't get paralyzed staring at the sun. You know, you can't just admire the problem all the time, and you've got to start somewhere. It's a bit gross, but it's the how do you eat an elephant kind of component, right? It's about being clear-eyed about where we want to go and having a sense for the future, but also then working with the teams and working across or with colleagues to say, here's step one, here's step two, here's step three, and maintaining that course, and but being willing to deviate where we need to. So that's kind of our a bit of a blast on sort of where we're heading with our trade modernization program, and certainly what's driving the focus of what we're putting forward to government and then what we're looking to implement.
Huh. Yes, the one bite at a time for how to eat an elephant is a critical is a critical thing to allow you just to avoid, as you say, that sort of paralysis of the big problem staring you in the face. Yeah. And say, okay, well, today we'll start on this and see how we go. Well, like
I'm going to say though as well, like that, you know, that I feel is probably a pressure that a lot of customs officials would feel. It's something unique to this area. It's not something I've come across previously in reform work I've done. I think it is something quite unique to the customs and trade and the cross-border trade space, but purely based on the complexity. And even if we just look at that end-to-end chain, right, where you've got so many different intermediaries, you've got a buyer and a seller that might never have a contractual relationship other than the supply. Then you've got freight forwarders, you've customs brokers, you've got biosecurity and customs. Like, you've got endless numbers of forms and requirements and declarations, and the complexity is huge. And I think it is really quite a unique problem. And I'm sure one that's shared amongst a lot of other agencies. But yeah, it is actually quite interesting how novel that is in the public policy space.
And the complexity on the one hand, and also the sort of diametrically opposed desires of the various stakeholders. I mean, on the one hand, you want to prevent all dangerous things ever from entering your territory from here to infinity. And on the other hand, you want the free flow of trade at all times without any untrammeled by your interventions. And those two things need to be made compatible. And that's not an easy task.
Yeah, exactly. And understanding how those levers work, I think, is critical. You know, having that slow time to think about the push and pull of different factors is important, but also the ability to try things out. And so one of the innovations and we're really proud of it with recently, well, not so recently, 6 months ago, but recent in my context of how I think about things. It recently passed our parliament was changes to establish a customs regulatory sandbox. So it's interesting. It's a piece of legislation that allows us to temporarily suspend particular provisions of the Customs Act to undertake a controlled trial with industry. So say there was a particular part of the Act that we're thinking, is this really fit for purpose? Is this something? Is this holding back our traders? We want to check it out. Now, to go through that process of amending it, a lot of that's hypothetical, and obviously we've got parliamentary process that goes through apart from everything else. But this sandbox allows us to set up a short-time trial and to, in real live cases too, this is live fire ammunition with the kind of thing, this is not, you know, pretend, actually test out what that change will look like. And is it worth it for industry is one that we'd look at. You know, like, we might do it and say, is the benefit really there? Like, you know, maybe better off staying with what we've got. But also we can test then the regulatory concerns or, you know, things that the government might need to consider, because to your point before, that diametrically opposing kind of tension is a sandbox, it's a place to play that doesn't sort of, we don't knock it out and say, oh no, we're not sure, so we're not going to do it. It kind of almost emboldens us to say, okay, well, we can try that and see how it goes. And so it's, you know, we were really, really, really excited when that passed through Parliament, and next month will take effect, and we've been engaging with our industry here in Australia just to start to think about these ideas that could come through. I think that's an example of where, you know, we have to be flexible in the way that we're thinking about the reform that we want to take forward. And yeah, I think it'll be really interesting, and it's something that we're really excited to unpack and take forward.
Is that something you can talk about, your upcoming projects for the sandbox, or is that premature?
So the legislation won't come into effect until next month, and then as part of that we can start to receive trial ideas. So the initial discussions, but again, as I mentioned, in our relationship with industry, you know, they've been part of this journey for a long time, both when it was a exposure, you know, a draft legislation, and all the way through. And so we're certainly encouraging industry members to kind of think about, oh, well, these are some ideas that we might have. And we had a recent forum with them all. It was a 4 or 5 hour meeting with all these industry officials, just talking through different ideas, you know. But that to me is the essence of good reform, is when you can have all these people with, and these private sector folks and these industry officials, they have so much knowledge, and they have a unique perspective because they're seeing the other side of the regulatory engagement. And so for them to feel comfortable and open to sort of put the ideas, now not all those ideas are going to, you know, move through to a trial, but it's just such a useful discussion to have as well, you know. And I think for me it was one of the most energizing sort of discussions I've had in this role. So I think once we get that process up and running, the trial ideas will start to come through, and it's certainly something that we will be, per the legislation, we will advertise or sort of put the information out about potential trials coming up, which is a sort of requirement to ensure that everyone gets a fair crack at it and get to have a look at it.
So oh, that's yeah. fascinating. And that's something I will definitely be following up on as information becomes public, because as you say, I mean, if you're having 5 hour conversations with industry, you're creating sandboxes where you can go and play with real live case studies and see what works and what doesn't. That's, again, a great way to create trust, a great way to create a sense you're all working on the same, basically for the same goals.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we don't take that lightly as well. You know, like the time that industry and business give to us, we know that it would be, you know, we have to make sure that we are giving these industry stakeholders value back, and, you know, a return on their investment of time.
How does the trade modernization program that we've been discussing provide opportunities to harness the potential of the big three, big data, machine learning, and artificial intelligence? What are the most significant areas that the ABF have identified in which to apply AI and machine learning?
Yeah, I think you struggle to find a discussion these days that isn't kind of contemplating AI or machine learning or something. And, you know, I think when we look at modernization, we are absolutely considering the role that AI will play or how it's going to change the way we do things. Look, there are so many different ways that it could intersect, both from just the way we operate as an organization, all the way to service delivery components, into kind of what is more uniquely, I would say, a customs environment, because most organizations or government departments are going to deal with a lot of these different, parts around, you know, more efficient kind of processes and service delivery. For customs, I think one of the big ones that we're looking at, and certainly what I spoke to in Vietnam, is some of the work that we're looking at on automated threat detection and machine learning as it relates to our X-ray capability. It's something that we are partnered with a number of international customs administrations, including a number in some of your member countries, And the big part of that is, could artificial intelligence help as a tool our officers' tradecraft be enhanced? You know, that could be anything from a sort of deliberative AI where it says that's a gun part, into kind of more of a predictive or kind of, you know, anomaly-based element where it says, look, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but that is not a refrigerated cargo thing. Or there's something up with that cargo container. And it's interesting, right, because I think both of them have a lot of potential in terms of where that goes. But you know, when you say how do we implement or how do we adopt AI, I think at this point we're still kind of working through what the potential for that technology will be. You know, I personally think it is inevitable. Like, it's not one of these sort of flash in the pan things or something that's a, you know, du jour sort of tech speak and then goes away. You know, it is quite inevitable and transformative. But how we adopt or how we adapt that technology will be critical. And, you know, one of the things that I spoke about and is really critical in my mind is that intersection with our workforce, with our officers. And, you know, I think you said it before, you know, there's no point having a shiny tool in the hands of our workforce if it's not giving them what they want or it's something that they're able to understand. You know, like I said, the tradecraft of our officers is incredible. What they can do, what they can spot in an X-ray image, it's amazing. I've been constantly impressed with what our teams find. I've got no chance. Obviously, I shouldn't do a, you know, where's Wally or anything or those magic eye pictures because I just can't see it. And so what we want to do is give our officers those tools that will make that faster, better, but not lose the essence of what makes them great. And importantly, we also want to make sure that when we think about those ethical and security perspectives for AI, that what we're developing or kind of the ideas that we're developing for this area have our people at the start as part of the co-design, not as an afterthought of, well, how are you going to go and do this? And one of the examples I constantly use when sort of kind of making this point is, you know, when we think about X-ray technology, it's one thing to have a machine out in the front line. It breaks down. You get someone in, a service, you know, person fixes it. What happens when an algorithm starts to play up in the field? You know, and I think it necessitates us to think about the workforce challenges in a holistic way, getting the right skills, developing the, you know, the sort of the data literacy, developing that workforce of the future, as well as, and this is a huge thing for me and for my area, having a crystal clear business process and requirements. What do you want to achieve with that technology? And I think sometimes we don't ask that question. And I think AI is definitely one of those areas where people can kind of get lost in the art of the possible. And again, going back to what I was saying before about staring at the sun, there's so many things that we could just start to do. But how does this drive us towards that future state? And again, when we think about the border as an asset, you don't just make investments sort of, you know, you obviously got to seed some ideas, but at the same time, we want to have a deliberate approach to this reform. And so when I think about AI technology and the potential, it's huge. But I also think really, you know, perhaps pragmatically about some of those challenges about operationalizing it and about ensuring that it fits the needs of our officers now and into the future. But yeah, look, the potential for what could happen and what it could do and how it could help enhance our customs interdiction and the work we do at the border. It's there's a lot of potential.
It's yeah, you're talking about theory and practice and the challenges of actually getting the AI, machine learning, big data, those big words out of the theoretical realm and into your day-to-day operations. It must be a huge challenge. Do you have any instructive success stories or surprising failures that you've encountered so far in implementing AI and machine learning?
We've had some really great trials so far. We've been looking at different things about algorithms and, you know, looking at gun parts and things like that and how that might work. We're also looking closely at the kind of technology that would support or best support AI as well. So it's not just about, it's not just about the algorithms themselves, which is a challenge. It's also about the technology platforms and the machines and the things that are going to best support that for future decisions. And we did a really, really great piece of work with our science agency here in Australia, the CSIRO, and they did a wonderful piece looking at emerging technologies in this space and just understanding what's out there and, you know, what kind of technology we might be able to use going forward, and also what would support these AI investments. And I think that was really helpful in terms of plotting out, again, the pathway to how we might utilize this technology. There's a lot to consider in that beyond just the wonderful, you know, laboratory environment of developing an algorithm. And look, a comment I made certainly at the conference and kind of would underscore here again is, you know, when it comes to the industry angle to that, you know, we really want to work with you know, vendors and providers, but part of that is also being clear that whatever we're creating, it needs to fit our requirements. And so something that might fit, for example, in an X-ray environment, aviation security scenario might not fit customs. The complexity is completely different. But also there's an operational component which says, well, hang on a second, that might work in, you know, in this port environment in Europe or Singapore or the US, but come down to our ports, come down to see our setup, come down and see how this environment works, and then let's solve and work through ideas from that. I think my sense is this AI work is something that is not going to be, one size fits all. It is definitely going to be something that is a journey for regulators, for industry, for others to take together. So I think part of it's about us being clear-eyed and deliberate about what we want to do and achieve. And then the next part is starting to think about how we unlock that potential. But again, with workforce and with a clear sense of our requirements at the front of mind.
Now, that publication that you mentioned on emerging technologies, is that a publicly available publication or is that internal? Because that might be a wonderful.
It's more of an internal, but the CSIRO do some wonderful pieces around a range of different components. That was more of a, I think, kind of reflecting also a bit about our mantra here in Customs and Border Modernization, which is partner with the researchers and the academics and the people that know this stuff that will give you a different lens, and really seeking that knowledge before we go ahead to sort of undertake a particular course of action. So it really is about making sure that we've got the best knowledge. And I got to say, a big part of that research work was also understanding what other countries are doing, what other customs administrations are doing around the world. And that was, that was just so useful for us.
Well, yeah, don't reinvent the wheel. And also teamwork is the strongest kind of work. This brings me directly to my next topic, which is international collaborative projects. A couple of years ago, ABF won the PEN-CP Customs Innovation Award for your submission, Authorized Economic Operator, Bulk Upload Function. Could you talk a bit about this function and how the AEO represents your organization's approach to customs work?
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, I had the privilege, I think it was represented, I know, when I was in the Netherlands for the last WCO technology conference then, and the team had come across to receive that. And it was fantastic. It was actually really interesting for me to get a closer understanding of the work the team had done. The AEO, and you know we love our acronyms. It is a really important relationship in terms of the AEO program and the work that we do in terms of how we unlock those benefits in partner countries. So the bulk upload functionality, which is what sort of the project was about, was kind of a great example of how we're looking to improve our approach to AEO, to remove sort of a clunky process. And it was a relatively, and it goes to what I was talking about before about that innovation mindset. It was a relatively small but impactful project. So the resources were targeted to address this particular inefficiency of, you know, uploading a lot of these data points and providing an opportunity to do that in a much quicker way. So the AEO program itself and the benefit that that has is tied particularly also to those mutual recognition agreements, which are just so key. And I think for our trusted traders, which is our AEO program, so it's Australian Trusted Traders, this is a way that we can really realize that full potential for those agreements, but also having a greater efficiency in our data exchanges, reducing manual intervention and improving our data accuracy. Those are all components that made it, you know, that kind of small tier innovation really sort of attractive. And, you know, I think the award was certainly well earned for those teams, and, you know, they did a really good job, you know, just sort of showing where you don't need to do massive projects to have an impact. And we've certainly done that in my own program with a few different little innovations that, you know, traders have asked for ages. Oh, it's just this irritant. It's just this thing. I just wish we could do X, Y, Z. And, you know, I think sometimes you can get locked into those big reform targets and you kind of miss out on the not low hanging fruit because it's never low hanging. But you can miss out on those kind of little small things that I think are so important to getting the efficiencies, but also building that relationship to say, look, we're hearing you. You know, we want to resolve this, not in 10 years, but help you with this now. So I think it's a good example of that, and certainly, you know, a really nice little project.
Well, in line with what you said about the CSRO's attitude towards collaboration across various disciplines, have you and your colleagues at ABF taken part in many international collaborative projects like PenCP? And what are the kinds of challenges of working in large scale, multidisciplinary international projects like this? And what are the potential benefits if executed well?
Obviously, we have a lot of engagement across, particularly with the WCO, within our Border 5 and in more regionally within APEC as well. And I think within our reform side, when I think about something like what we talked about before about digital verification platform, that's one where we've been trialing with regional partners, so with Singapore, and we've got some upcoming trials over this year with some other partners in the Asian region. They're examples of where we are looking to consider that reform in a cross-border environment. And, you know, another really great example is a piece of work that we did with the WCO last year, which was Operation Tin Can, so you might be aware of. So that was a supply chain operation that we ran with the WCO, which was ABF-led but involved our European partners, involved industry, and we learnt so much from that initiative in how we can then you know, take that further, you know, how we can better partner with industry on enforcement efforts, but and how we can operationalize that. And I think, you know, the success is clear, right? Like, I think there was something like 98 tons of cocaine seized in that. You know, that's transformative. You know, it's huge. And so I think those elements of where we're working together across countries, but also across that divide of industry and academia is something that we are very open to and have engaged in quite a lot, whether it's in a specific reform context or into a broader operational context. So there's lots of examples of where we've done it in the past, and I think certainly is something that we look to. I know in our reform space, I often will think, well, hang on, is this something that someone else is doing, and how can we work with them to learn from that? It's just a better way of doing it.
Right. And, you know, PenCP itself is looking to evolve into a new and improved PenCP 2.0 that moves beyond Europe and creates a truly global customs community. In this kind of a scenario, what services, data sharing, learning opportunities, and so forth would ABF most want to see in this PenCP 2.0?
Yeah, I think, look, having had a look at kind of the work the PenCP has done in the past, but also sort of some of the engagements we've had. And I think certainly when we were talking over in Vietnam, certainly a lot of the examples that other administrations are able to give, I think that's very exciting. I think being able to leverage off those experiences, but also the potential to line up existing lines of effort. So it might be that it's a piece of work that you don't know, because sometimes things are cooked, you're in the process of cooking something up. You don't know that other people might be doing the exact same thing, but having a mechanism and having an opportunity in a forum to share those ideas, to understand that, but also to see where the, you know, particularly in academia, one of the big things, and we're really lucky to have a number of universities that engage in this space. And, you know, I find it interesting to know where their research is going. Because sometimes it can be an indicator of something that you might not have thought about, or it could also be, can you support them and say, hey, these are some of the problems that we're looking at, and then the research can kind of really deepen that understanding of a particular issue. So I think bringing that to a broader stage is incredibly important. I think when we look at international engagement, the thing that we sort of see with cross-border trade is the very fact that it is an international supply chain. You can't solve just your problems on your border and then be happy with that. It is about understanding that bigger ecosystem. And, I think certainly data standardization and data sharing, supply chain security, innovative regulatory models. Like, we're really keen to learn from different things about the way that people structure things, how they collect revenue. And then obviously, you know, digital innovations, technology advances in AI. I think those are all as important, but probably it's the last bit that gets the most juice, right? Because it's this sort of exciting sort of component. No one gets too excited about addressing regulatory reform and the plumbing of hard IT as much as they do about a reg tech initiative or something. But I think, you know, for those that are responsible for those parts, there is an appreciation of the challenges that brings. And yeah, so I think that's a really exciting thing. I'd love to learn more about that and understand where that's heading.
This concludes the second part of my PenCast conversation with Mr. Ashley Bell, Assistant Secretary for Customs and Border Modernization at the Australian Border Force. Tune in soon for the third and final segment of our talk. Thank you.